everybody. Welcome to yet another podcast. Today it's me, Duncan Williams, and my partner, John Newsome.
Good morning.
And we've got various things to discuss today. And let's start with our usual subject of inflation and interest rates. Not much to report on that front at the moment, although the prospect for the reduction of interest rates seems to be subsiding to a certain extent, especially in America. There was some news out today that some analysts were expecting a cut in July, and now they're thinking that that won't happen. John?
Well, repeat after me, Duncan. Interest rates and inflation are always going to fall. You're going off message again.
Yeah, I know. I think what frightens me is that there's a lot of people out there who are sort of sub 50 who think interest rates at 5% are high, whereas to us people who have got grey hair, or no hair in your case, John, 5% is actually average, and in my lifetime is, I would say, slightly below average, really, going back to the 80s and 70s.
The first couple of houses I bought, I mean, if you just told me that I could have had a mortgage at 5%, I'd have thought that that was like winning the lottery. They were always double digit. I accept the world has changed somewhat, but this idea that normality is ultra low interest rates is nonsense.
What's interesting this last week and week before were that mortgage lenders have marginally increased their rates. HSBC, NatWest this week, and Nationwide and Santander last week. So you'd have thought the direction of travel would have been lower, which, funnily enough, is what Halifax had done from what I've seen. But why are they raising interest rates when the perception is that interest rates, base rates, will start to fall towards the end of 2024?
I guess they were expecting, or the consensus was, for rates to be cut sort of globally, really, maybe from March onwards. Then it went to July, and it looks like that, as you said earlier, is somewhat withering on the vine. So I suppose that's part of it. I suspect that pretty much explains it. But we're still seeing the blips in inflation in various places. The last US inflation figures, if you strip the figures out and you get to this ultra core or whatever they call it, and you strip out food and energy and all the rest of it, but for those of us that do eat and for those of us that do use energy, it's a pointless number. I think what we've seen now post-pandemic is, and with all the money printing, is that the developed world certainly is more inflation prone. The great deflation that came out of China, I think we're looking at a different thing now, and you're getting stuff getting nearshored and reshored where it will cost more to do these things. That's inflationary. You've got what's going on in the Red Sea. That's inflationary. You've got growing world energy demand. That's inflationary. So I think this idea that rates can just smoothly drop back to levels which I think we could call ultra low, I'm not buying it.
No, I mean, it's not only the MPC, Bank of England, which sets these rates. It is global markets. It is the global fixed interest market. As a nation, I've said this before, you have to have attractive rates to ensure that you can sell treasury stock, which funds your public sector borrowing requirement. So if the outside investors feel that there is too high a degree of risk to invest in the UK, they will demand a slightly higher level of interest. That's why treasury yields differ from country to country.
Show me a developed nation that's got its budget under control. They're crowding out private sector investment because no one can get anywhere near a balanced budget. That has obvious implications for the rates that are going to be needed to attract anyone to lend them money.
Okay, well, before we move on, we'll talk about our friend Mr. Bailey, who is ultimately responsible for interest rates, etc. And he had a speech at a dinner recently when he questioned why the UK banking stocks were doing so badly and described it as a bit of a puzzle. His raison d'etre is to be in charge of the Bank of England. It's not to pass comment on stock prices.
Yeah, I would agree. It's an element of mission creep. I don't think you should really speak about that. By all means, speak about capital adequacy and the strength of balance sheets and the buffer and tier one capital and this kind of stuff if you're talking about banks. But yeah, but it's not the first time Bailey's got involved in things that he doesn't really know about, isn't it? I mean, interest rates being one of them. Has the Bank of England, under his control, got anything right over the past two or three years?
He said that the banks have emerged from a few choppy years in sound health. I wonder whether he's a buyer.
Well, it's like all these central bank people now. They're politicians. They know what they've got to say. They don't want to say anything to frighten the horses. It's a PR job.
Right, let's move on. So in terms of markets, John, you're aware what's happened after 34 years.
Could that be something to do with the Japanese stock market?
It is. It is. It's actually passed its previous high, which was set 34 years ago.
Which kind of shows what can happen when things get into bubble territory, isn't it? Do you remember back then, and it was the land value of the Imperial Palace was worth more than the state of California or something like that.
Ridiculous.
With hindsight, there's a bell ringing, isn't there, which tells you that things are badly wrong.
Yeah. They've suffered with demographics, and they have suffered with deflation. And I think I'm right in saying it's the only modern economy which has still got negative interest rates, potentially.
Japan is a place that I think pretty much walks to its own beat. I mean, its debt to GDP ratio is kind of twice and beyond what, say, the UK's is or what the US's is. A lot of their bonds are bought by their own population, so that does help them. I actually probably am going on holiday there later this year, so it'll be interesting to see what's going on.
Very good. You'll be able to fulfill this with words of wisdom.
Hopefully.
And Body Shop has failed this week. Poor old Anita Ruddock will be turning in her grave. She sold it 20 years ago. It's now gone through three owners, and the third owner would appear to have been full of debt, and it would appear that it's nearly all over.
Yeah, a dead Body Shop.
And the other thing which we were talking about, various results have been coming out from UK banks. The UK banks are now making provision for scandals with regard to car finance.
I foresee a no-win, no-fee nirvana on the horizon. This is PPI Mark II, isn't it?
So moving on to the financial services industry, which is where we sit, there was a survey done the other day, John, I don't know whether you saw it, and it was pensions and lifetime savings. And to have a moderate retirement, a couple will need £43,000 for pensionable income, and for a comfortable retirement, you will need £59,000 worth of income. So me being me, started to look at the numbers and wondering how much capital is actually required for that. So on the assumption that both with a moderate and a comfortable retirement, you receive a state pension of roughly £12,000. For a moderate retirement, you need £750,000 worth of capital invested to produce that level of income after taking into account the state pension. And for a comfortable life pension, then you need £1.1 million. And of course, that is based on what we know now, i.e. that the pension age won't rise, and of course, that the pension will not be means tested at some point. My take on that is that if those numbers are correct, people have saved woefully short of what is required.
Yeah, well, we're just saying there's going to be a lot of disappointed people because too many people have been too imprudent.
Yeah, it just shows the importance of starting to save early, using your ISAs, using your pensions, getting the tax relief. And as we've said many times before, Einstein said the eighth wonder of the world was the effect of compounding. And that is the huge advantage of starting at a young age. You are compounding every single year you're saving.
Yes, what was it? Compound interest. Those that understand it, collect it. Those that don't, pay it. I think that was what Mr. Einstein said.
So finally, John, I was interested to read about Neil Woodford. Most people remember that he was a fund manager with Perpetual, then Invesco Perpetual. He managed the income fund, the high income fund. He had a very good track record and was probably the most famous fund manager in the UK. He then left and set up Woodford Investment Management and attracted a huge amount of capital.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I remember. And he probably would have done well enough, wouldn't he? But he seemed to stray from his modus operandi and started buying some very early stage stuff, some of which was private. And it was a long way from what he'd done when he was managing money at Invesco.
Basically, the size of the fund started to reduce as people withdrew money, and there was effectively a run on the fund, and it was all liquidated. Link Asset Services were the trustees and were responsible for the liquidation of the trust. But interestingly, the FCA has said that Link are responsible for mismanagement and not Neil Woodford.
Yes, there's a lot one could say about this, isn't there? But perhaps one should emulate the late, great Charlie Munger. I have nothing to add.
As we come to the end of another tax year, we're busy beavering away, using up capital gains tax allowances. We've said this before, capital gains tax allowances are being reduced. And my guess is that the tax rates will go to marginal rates as time goes by. It's an easy way for the Exchequer to raise funds, and capital gains tax only affects a small percentage of people. And what's more is it's a tax when you've been successful. My advice, make sure you're using up your capital gains tax allowances and then get the money sheltered in an ISA. We do that for our clients all the time. We do it throughout the year. If you need some help, please do let us know. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening. Hope you've enjoyed it. We've covered our usual topics of interest rates, inflation, moved on to the Japanese market, which hit an all-time high after 34 years. And we've spoken a bit about the amount of money which you need in your savings in order to have a nice retirement. Please do tell your friends about us. Please do subscribe, and we'll look forward to seeing you next time. So it's bye from me, Duncan Williams, and from John Newsome.
Goodbye.
This material shouldn't be considered as advice or an investment recommendation. You should consult an advisor regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority prior to making investment decisions. All investments carry a degree of risk. The value of any investment or income received from it can go up as well as down, and you may not get back the amount invested. Information recorded within this podcast was accurate at the time of recording.